And you're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Cam Walker on the line from Friends of the Earth. G'day, Cam. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Annie.
Yeah, and I was fascinating to read Friends of the Earth's plan for a climate-ready Victoria leading up to the Victorian budget, which is in May. I mean, you're doing a running jump. It's important stuff. And I noticed that you quote that Jacinta Allen, the new Premier, who has said that she is aware that climate change has resulted in more frequent flooding and extreme weather, underscoring the need to transition to renewable energy. So perhaps your plan is on her desk right at the moment.
Yes, we hope so.
All right, so there's different parts of your plan. One of them is the effective bus arrangements in the West. Why is that important?
We know that many communities on the fringe of Melbourne that are growing quite rapidly and are driven basically by the developers are really terrible in terms of access to public amenities, open space, public transport, that sort of thing. And that's what happens when we let private developers set the nature of development in our cities. And anyone that particularly lives in the West, the outer West or the outer North, knows that public transport can be terrible. It's not reliable and it's just not really practical for people in many aspects of their day-to-day lives. So, yeah, we're just saying buses are a really important thing to invest in. We're saying we need electric buses, so we need to transition rapidly off the old diesel buses. And we need an accessible, what we call a turn-up-and-go bus network in the West. That would include also a rerouting of the routes, so they're much more direct and travel on the arterial roads, because at present a lot of the bus networks, you know, weave around the suburbs and they're not practical for commuting. So we're saying, you know, a turn up and go system every 10 minutes, 6 a.m. to midnight, at least 5 days a week to 7 days a week, to allow people to do their daily shopping, their, you know, taking the kids to school, going to work in a way that's going to be viable for them.
Yeah, fast, frequent and connected buses. Now, this is part of your Sustainable Cities Collective, and it's important in a sense for effective and sustainable living for people all over the city, not just part of the city.
Exactly, yeah. We all need access to affordable, accessible and safe public transport. And it shouldn't just be if you're lucky enough to live on a train line or a tram line. You know, everyone deserves that sort of kind of access. And buses are a relatively cheap way to do it. So it's hard after the fact to retrofit in a light rail network where there wasn't one before, because you've got to, you know, access the land and do all that. Buses are a very cheap way to improve your public transport. And you can do it in a short period of time. It might take you several years to put in a light rail or a heavy rail link, but buses you can pretty much do straight away.
It's interesting because you had forums in 2022 and none of the Labor people turned up to any of them.
That's right, yes. We were very disappointed by the lack of buy-in from the ALP in the build-up to the election.
And that actually came out in the wash, didn't it? Because there's been a downturn in support out in the West for the Labor Party.
Yes, there has. And I think that, you know, there's multiple factors at play here. Of course, in the outer burbs, most people need to travel and have multiple cars within families to be able to get to work and do life and go to school and that sort of thing. So cost of living pressures are really huge. And this is a government that has done a lot of transformative work, you know, the Metro Tunnel and, you know, they're ending native forest logging in the east and they're phasing out coal. There's lots of great stuff that's happening, but they really run the risk of not looking after those emerging communities on the suburban fringes. And if they don't look after them, then, of course, people will look elsewhere in terms of where they're putting their vote.
And before we leave that issue, there's a couple of other things. There was a report which hasn't... which actually supports a lot of the things you say, your group says, but hasn't shown any government interest. And also a majority, they're saying, oh, nothing can be done, but the majority of those, the contracts go to one single international company, right?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah, which is actually a very important key issue.
Yes, it is. And it's interesting that with the current state government, they have re-established the State Electricity Commission, which is saying government and the public should be involved in energy production. And I think that is great. But what we have is a system that, you know, back to the days of Jeff Kennett, they privatised everything they could basically, you know, pick up
couldn't
and sell
nail
off.
Down.
Exactly. So much of our public transport system is run by for-profit companies and often companies from overseas. So there's a deeper conversation here about how, as all the licences to run different parts of our public transport system come up, how do we bring them back into the public running them again? We shouldn't accept that privatisation and outsourcing is a one-way street. I think the establishment of the SEC demonstrates what is possible with better government will, and we need to see more of those contracts as they, you know, come up for renewal. Let's look at governments intervening and actually running our public transport systems again.
And what you're saying is that that's a key issue for sustainability.
Yes, we believe so, because if you're running essential infrastructure, be it water or electricity or public transport, and you're running it simply from a for-profit basis, which is what private companies do, it's never going to deliver fully for what the community needs or what the environment needs. So there is a environmental argument to bring services back into government and or public control.
Now, because you're targeting the allocations funding from the budget coming up in May, you've got some really practical issues regarding native forests and fire protection, haven't you?
Yes, I think we do. And we're very mindful that there's not a lot of money in the state budget. And so, you know, there's no point asking for $100 million for something. So we've tried to suggest things that are relatively cheap and deliver a good outcome. So hence the buses rather than saying build more train tracks. With fire, we think that it's clear that climate change is making our fire seasons longer and more intense. And it's very good that the government has invested heavily in career firefighters through the state firefighting agency, which is called Forest Fire Management Victoria. But we rely very heavily on volunteers. And if you live in Melbourne, you can't actually sign up as a volunteer firefighter because you need to live very close to a station. So the absolute majority of people in Victoria and the absolute majority in Melbourne cannot become volunteer firefighters. But we reckon that lots of people would chip in if they could. So we're proposing a new system where there would be a volunteer remote area firefighting team that would set up within the CFA at a very low cost, and we're estimating you could actually set it up and get it running, a pilot program, for about $200,000, which is absolutely nothing when you think of a state budget, but make it accessible to people who live, you know, in Fitzroy or Elwood or Box Hill, so they can sign on and they can assist firefighting efforts, because we know we are losing volunteer firefighters, and we do know that many brigades in the country are getting older and struggling to find new members, and we also know that fire seasons are getting worse and longer, and that puts continued strain on the existing volunteers we have. So we're saying set up this team, put it in the CFA, make it accessible to city-based people, and it means that people in the city get to share some of that burden if they want to, but it benefits all of Victoria if we did it that way.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because your figures are pretty frightening, actually. The CFA has lost around 2,000 volunteers over 2 years, and it appears that around 10,000 volunteer firefighters quit the Rural Fire Service in Queensland. So, I mean, you know, that's the Queensland experience, but we're talking about Australia-wide, or, I mean, Victoria in particularly, but this is an Australia-wide issue.
Yes, it is. And the other thing I'd just note is that this proposal for a volunteer remote area firefighting team, New South Wales, Queensland and the ACT already have these crews. Victoria doesn't. And it's kind of strange that we don't, because it's a very cheap way to bring extra people into fighting fires. But what we're proposing is different to what anyone else has done before, where we're saying focus specifically on people in urban areas. So we reckon it will just open up a whole bunch of volunteers who are going to be often young and fit and diverse, you know, and we need those people, frankly, in the CFA, bring them in and allow them to be involved, and you could train them and deploy them in a way that would make a lot of sense. So if you have summer holidays, you say, I'm available for 3 weeks in January, and then you could just be deployed in if there was a need in terms of what they call the big fires, the campaign fires.
And if we stay in the forests, you've got a plan for what should happen now that logging native forests has been stopped in Victoria?
Well, at this point, we don't exactly have a plan because we're saying now is the moment for the conservation movement to listen deeply to First Nations people. We have 1.8 million hectares of forestry land in the east of the state that has been subject to logging for many years. That is now stopped, which is absolutely amazing. The government needs to suggest a process for how we decide what next with those forests. They haven't announced that process as yet. But what Friends of the Earth is saying is let's just take a deep breath. Let's engage with First Nations people who have an interest in that forest country, you know, where it's their traditional country, and listen to what they're saying. And this is a moment where, you know, the conservation movement opens its meetings and has done for years by acknowledging country. This is the moment where we get to demonstrate that solidarity is real. We need to listen, we need to reflect, and we need to take direction from First Nation groups with an interest in the forest country.
And, of course, that means employment for Indigenous people too.
Yes, indeed. And there's going to be such a lot of work to do because we know native forest logging has been disastrous for biodiversity. We know we have well over 100,000 hectares of alpine ash forests, which is on the cusp of collapse. If they get one more fire through those forests, we will lose more than 100,000 hectares of forest. That is completely collapsed and become just a grassy wasteland, possibly with some wattle trees in it. There's so much restoration work we need to do, and it's really essential that First Nations people, traditional owner groups, are adequately resourced to be involved in healing the country in the way that we need to do. We need to bring the best ecological science into that mix, but we also need to trust and work with First Nations people and ensure that they are decision makers in that process, not just considered another stakeholder.
Remind you, listeners, you're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie, and we're having a chat with Cam Walker from Friends of the Earth, and we're talking about Friends of the Earth's suggestions for a climate safe Victoria, and these are suggestions for the Victorian budget coming up in May. We're now talking about a Victorian Community Climate Adaption Fund, and I was particularly interested in this because it's about community-led solutions, but it's also about how Victoria is not just the cities, they're in rural areas as well.
Yes, exactly. And we are getting what they call compound disasters now. So we had those big floods in Northern Vic in 2022, and now we've just had another bunch of flooding. Earlier in the summer, they had those big fires in Gippsland that was followed pretty much straight away by flooding. So we're seeing, under climate change, under global warming, the gap between natural disasters shrinking. And so you get these compound effects. And, you know, you can have one flood and your house gets flooded and you recover and you get on with your life. But what happens when 10 months later you get the same flood again, or, you know, you get another fire? So we need to accept we are in a different point in history. Climate change is no longer something that might happen in the future somewhere else. It's happening to us now. That drives the need for us to take action to mitigate, that is, reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, and Victoria needs to continue to do that. But we need to directly grapple with the fact that many of our communities are being impacted by climate change right now, and we need to understand that people in communities often know best, and there's often great knowledge and great skills and great networking capacity in communities, so we need to empower them to be able to be in charge of how they prepare for their disasters, how they respond to disasters, and how they recover afterwards.
And then you go to a really practical thing, which is the gas substitution and home electrification system. You say it's been lagging a bit.
It has. I mean, they are moving forward, and it's interesting that the Liberals have come out and are arguing, you know, oh, no, we need more gas. And that an argument from the 1990s. We don't need gas.
Well, maybe they've got shares. Maybe they've got shares in some company.
I don't know what's going on, but they're backing the wrong horse. They're attaching it to a bit of a culture war kind of frame. But the fact is, we get most of our gas from Bass Strait. Bass Strait gas reserves are declining very rapidly. And we all know that when something becomes rarer, the cost can only go in one direction, which is up. So if we're going to hang on to gas, we're just locking ourselves into steeper costs. And so the cost of living will continue to go up. We know, however, you can run homes very easily on 100% electric. That's heating and cooling and hot water systems and cooking. And the government is moving in that direction, and they do have this gas substitution roadmap. And we're just saying, keep going, you know, keep going faster, keep helping people to switch what they call fuel switching away from gas and into home electrification. Give funds to allow people to do that, have an energy upgrade program, and really important that no one is left behind. So invest in retrofitting public housing to replace gas appliances, you know, gas heated hot water systems and gas stovetops, to reduce costs for people who are living on very limited income.
Now, Cam, you've want people, listeners, to go and have a look, and if they actually agree, to send a letter of support.
Yes, that would be great. If you just do a web search, Friends the Earth proposal for Climate Ready Victoria, you'll find our main page very easily. You'll find the full budget submission if you're interested in the details, and you'll find a letter which will go to the Premier saying, hey, here are some ideas. I would love it if you would fund this. And of course, it's set up as a letter that you can edit. So if there's things that you're interested in, add them as well and send it to the Premier.
Thank you very much for talking to us this morning, Cam.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks. Thanks. And good to have a chat.
And that was Cam Walker from Friends of the Earth. And as he said, it's all about Victoria being climate ready.